Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Twice a week, we interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how to break through the noise and capture the audience's attention. Today's guest is Harry Campbell. Harry is the founder and owner of the Rideshare Guy blog and podcast, a media and research company focused on the gig economy.
Thanks so much for joining us, Harry.
Thanks for having me, Ari. Excited to chat.
Yeah. So, you know, let's start off with the origins of what you did and what you were building. You know, I think a lot of folks, when they start out, they're not, you know, starting out, oh, I'm going to build out this, you know, media publishing company, but that's sort of what's happened with you. You know, can you talk a bit about, you know, how it started?
Yeah. And I mean, I think that, you know, for me these days, the easiest way to describe what I do is I tell people I have a blog, but really, you know, it is probably more of a media company since we've got a blog, a couple of podcasts, YouTube channel, courses, books. We do consulting, advising, investing. So you could sort of see, you know, we really try to leverage a lot of the different, you know, aspects of, you know, the benefits that we get from running a media company. And, but when I first started, you know, actually it was pretty simple. I started driving for Uber and Lyft. And on the side, I was working as an aerospace engineer for Boeing at the time, crunching spreadsheets in a cubicle, kind of the opposite of what I do now, a lot more boring, but I was decent at it and it paid the bills. And I just had a little extra time in my hands, so started driving for Uber and Lyft and really just quickly realized that this was kind of an exploding vertical. You know, Uber, you know, not everyone had heard about Uber yet. You know, your parents definitely hadn't heard about Uber yet. And maybe your hip friends, you know, were kind of the ones telling you about Uber, right? I wasn't one of the hip friends. I was getting told about Uber by the hip people. And, you know, so started driving and kind of realized, you know, it's not rocket science being an Uber and Lyft driver, but it is a lot tougher than it looks. So I really started covering the industry from the perspective of the worker, how much money you could make, what the experience was like, and really just the good and bad, telling it like it is. I mean, any job, you know, has its positives and negatives. And so I wasn't trying to sugarcoat anything. Hey, there's definitely some positives and there still are today, but there definitely were and still are some negatives. And that's kind of how the content started. And it's still, even to this day, you know, really primarily for the gig worker audience, although, you know, we've expanded, you know, you can imagine like all of our consulting revenue streams. We're not consulting with drivers anymore, but we're, you know, consulting more with companies that want to reach drivers and do things like that.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. And thanks for sharing that. You know, one of the things that I think we've seen an explosion of is like these really niche, you know, B2B, B2C vertical media companies.
Yeah.
You know, why do you think that this gap and, you know, just talking about yours at the ride sharing, you know, why do you think there's been more of this type of explosion and why is there a need for it when, you know, 5-10 years ago when the internet was still around and obviously, you know, fairly popular even then, like that wasn't happening. Why do you think the evolution that has changed since then?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that there's definitely, you know, like probably a complex answer, no easy answer, like with a lot of things in life, but I think probably a mix of the fact that it's just, you know, more people are getting onto the internet when they need help. You know, I think I was probably a little weird 5 or 10 years ago. Whenever I needed to learn how to do something, I would go onto YouTube and say, you know, how do you install, you know, recessed lighting? And I think nowadays everybody does that whenever they have a question, right? And so you have a lot of these digital platforms that just when people need services, they're having issues, right? They go to online services, you know, they go to YouTube, they go to Google, you know, and they might go to even Amazon, right? Which I think is the second or third biggest search engine, whether people realize it or not. And that's why my book is on Amazon and, you know, search for these topics. So I think that that's definitely one factor is that people are, you know, looking for these factors. And then of course, you know, I think like some other, you know, probably more media experts have talked about is just the gatekeeper status. A lot of these old media companies, you know, has basically disappeared. Anyone and everyone can start a blog pretty easily. But I would say, you know, anyone and everyone can start a YouTube channel even easier. One of the things that I love about YouTube right now is that you can really leverage a lot of the built-in basically SEO of YouTube. My Rideshare Guy YouTube channel has around 70,000 subscribers, which is pretty decent amount for a niche. But on I call it my personal channel. I have like 5 videos on it. And one day I just recorded a video for fun on a Warby Parker. This was a few years ago, the try on at home glasses company. I just, you know, just literally for fun because I'm I make videos for fun, and that's just one of the things I wanted to do in my spare time for some weird reason. And I had a nice title on it, and I just threw it out there. I literally had zero subscribers, and I looked at it the other day, and that video has 30,000 views. I haven't done anything with it. It was just sort of, something where I just did it for fun, and that's kind of just, I think, exemplifies, though, the power of YouTube. If you go start a blog and do one article about Warby Parker, no one's going to read it unless you push it out there, unless you have that built-in SEO, because there's just so much competition. But that's one of the things that I love about YouTube. And so I think that's probably why you see some people forming, and frankly, I think some of the best media companies, whether people realize it or not, are being formed on YouTube. If you've got 1 to 200,000 subscribers, you basically have a full-time business right there.
Yeah, I have a few questions, from that answer. I think, first I want to start with the beginning of your answer. One of the things that we've seen more of is, experts are putting themselves into, I'm an expert for X, right? So in your case, you're the rideshare guy.
Yeah.
What are the dangers of, saying I'm X? And how do you think about, and I don't know if you've given thought to this, expanding out of that? Is it dangerous when you tie yourself and tether yourself to, being X for a genre?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's dangerous, but I think that it can limit your opportunities. And where you kind of have, and this is why it's so tough, I think, sometimes when people are getting started on the content or the media side, is because you have to sort of find that right opportunity where there isn't a ton of competition, but where the niche is big enough that you can actually make a business out of it, if that's something you're interested in, but also that you're passionate about, right? So you have all these different factors at play that you have to balance, and it's probably something you've never done before, so it might take a few chances to get it right. And for me, I will say, the rideshare guy wasn't the first blog that I started. I did a bunch of personal finance sites and some freelance travel writing in the years before. So, when rideshare popped along, I feel like I did have a little bit of a head start. I was by no means an expert, but I did kind of know what I was doing. And I think for me, what I sort of recognized was just the fact that Uber and Lyft, this was something I was interested in. It looked like they were growing quickly and there was no one else really doing it. I just happened to be, those three factors are what I looked at, and I was kind of in the right place at the right time since I started driving for them around 2015, I want to say. And, so when I started my site, those, obviously Uber got huge after that and kind of kept raising billions and, literally billions of dollars every few months. So that definitely helped boost the sort of overall signal and profile of my site and my status. And so in a way, I think I sort of got lucky that I picked this niche of Uber and Lyft, but I was, I did have some strategy to it, but of course there was some luck that played a part. I think I easily, if I was a year or two later, maybe I would have picked food delivery and started, being the food delivery guy. And I think that there would have been similar opportunity, nowhere near as big as Uber and Lyft, but I think there would have been some opportunity there. So, I think even though, and I guess the other thing too, without making the answer too long, is, you can kind of sometimes I wouldn't get too caught up in the brand name, right? Like we now at the Rideshare Guy, like right now in the past month, a top 10 articles are all food delivery, even though my site is called the Rideshare Guy, right? So, we've got a lot of built-in SEO and knowledge and insight into the gig worker, right? So we sort of look for these entry and exit points to leverage. Okay, people know us for Uber and Lyft, but hey, there's 20 to 30% of drivers that also do food delivery. So let's start exploring some of that content, right? And that's really one of the things that I'm very interested in these days, just the sort of intersection of rideshare and other areas of mobility or labor or tech or whatever it might be, because I'm not an expert in any of those other areas, but wherever they intersect, that's where I think I can try and provide value.
So, you talked about food delivery as a trend you identified and you guys have begun to capitalize on. Is there anything you've noticed, potentially with other trends where, say, I'm thinking about starting a vertical media company that I go, that's a trend you should start in. That's a company, what are those common characteristics that you've noticed that, we could just talk about ride sharing and food delivery as one? What overlap there?
Yeah, well, I guess I wouldn't say that I noticed the food delivery trend, to be honest. I think that it sort of started more from the rideshare perspective. And, then there was this food delivery that popped up. So it's sort of just a natural extension of rideshare. And I think that's what I've personally always looked for. I think a good example is actually in 2018 when the scooters arrived. And, I think why I guess in a way, like I will say that I think I was able to spot that trend early because of my knowledge of rideshare, because I was sort of involved in that mobility. So when I saw these scooters come along and I said to myself, you know, I also, again, I got a little lucky because I happened to live in Santa Monica where Bird launched. So again, right, there was some knowledge, some luck. You can't do anything about where you live for the most part. And when I saw these scooters flying around, I said to myself, you know, they're kind of dinky, fun little toys right now, but I know on Uber, 50% of the rides are 2 miles or less. I know that these scooters right now, you know, they've got them on corners here and there, and they're not everywhere. But when they get enough density, very similar to like with an Uber, you know, when there's enough Ubers on every corner, basically, you know, where the ETA, it goes from 8 minutes to 6 minutes to 4 minutes, that's a very valuable KPI for Uber and Lyft. And so I'm sort of leveraging all of this knowledge that I've gained from Uber in this adjacent, you know, area. And so I started thinking to myself, how the hell can we cover Bird? And so we started doing scooter reviews. It turns out that Bird ended up using gig workers to charge and reposition the scooters. And so we were like really on top of that trend and covered it all of 2018 and 2019. And again, even though my site was called The Rideshare, I think 5 or 6 out of our top articles and top videos on the YouTube channel in 2019 were all scooter related. So that was, you know, it was a bit of a, I wouldn't call it fad, but you know, that was something we tried to take advantage of.
Yeah. So, you know, you guys write a lot of, you know, long form content and blog type content. You know, if you started this today and you talked about YouTube, you know, do you think it's still would have started off as a blog? Do you think, you know, YouTube would have been the place to go? You know, where would you be focused on publishing content today?
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, it depends on the person and the opportunity. I think for my, I'll go with myself personally, since that's who I know best. I think that one of the things for me that I've sort of recognized is that content is tough. You know, I think that I come at the media side, you know, the media business from a little bit of a unique perspective. I think that I'm sort of a business person, entrepreneur first, kind of blogger, YouTuber, content creator second. And it's really hard to sustain 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years of content creation if you're sort of someone who feels that way, right? There are a lot of great writers out there, you know, like Ben Thompson and a lot of these other folks. I forgot this guy's name, but NBA Shaw on Twitter, like a lot of these guys that are doing great content.
Nathan Bashaw.
Yeah, Nathan yeah. Bashaw. And I just knew his Twitter profile. It's kind of embarrassing. And, you know, I think these guys to me like look more like journalists first, and they're great. Some of them are like great business people, but I think that what they're passionate about is the content creation, and that's just not me. I like creating content, so but I don't love it. And I think that if I were to do it again, I like the idea of sort of creating mega pieces of content. So it's sort of like, instead, you know, there's sort of one content strategy that we leverage was basically consistent, right? We did 4 articles a week, 2 to 3 videos on YouTube a week for like 6 years and never missed a day. The holidays didn't matter, you know, and that was like a very consistent schedule. But I had to hire a lot of contributors in order to meet that schedule, because it was not feasible for me to do myself. I think the other strategy is to take a topic that you like and treat it a little bit less of like kind of a strict, you know, schedule, but also think about like, how can I provide the most amount of value on a certain topic, you know, that I'm interested in this moment. And maybe I'm only publishing once a month, or, you know, once about every 3 to 5 weeks. But when I do publish, it's damn good, right? It's damn amazing. And I feel like I would probably lean that's probably what I would lean towards in the future. And, you know, I think there's ways to make that work. I think you sort of have to be first into a niche and kind of, you know, if you try to break into a niche with that strategy, I think the consistency matters a lot more later. But if you're sort of one of the first people talking about Uber and Lyft, and you're doing like a mega analysis or mega article once a month or once every 2 or 3 weeks, I think you can make that work.
Yeah, there's been I see a lot of debate all the time about, like, you know, obviously the work has to be good, but there's something to be said of like, should I be publishing 5 times a week, decent quality, or once a week, really, really good, you know, quality post.
I don't know that one answer is, you know, right and one answer is wrong. I think there's just different strategies, right? I think that you kind of have to balance. And that's why I said, again, it's like sort of a personal choice, right? Like, maybe if, you know, I was blogging about travel, something that's kind of like more fun than Uber and Lyft, in my opinion, a little more sexy, a little more perks, a little more benefits, maybe that's something that I would be willing to blog about once a week, for example, or even twice a week, right? So I think that you kind of have to, you know, take what opportunities opportunities come your way. But that would be the one thing I would consider is like, you know, just how passionate you are about a subject. And, you know, imagine that that passion is probably going to wane some over time. So will you be able to sustain it? Because content is definitely a longer game than other, you know, products and services and businesses that you might start in other arenas, especially online.
Yeah, I think what's also really interesting about what you guys are doing is, you know, right now we see this trend towards, you know, paid newsletters. Everyone's launching a Substack, and that wasn't your focus. You know, one, obviously with what's going on now, I mean, if you started today, you know, would it be a paid newsletter? And can you also talk about, you know, some of the benefits of monetizing in the way you guys have, and why maybe, you know, people shouldn't start a paid newsletter and should, you know, have a free funnel, free newsletter, and consult instead. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. And, you know, monetization is actually one of the things that I'm like kind of most passionate about. I kind of joke with people, like a lot of people say that they like to make money, but I don't think anyone likes to make money as much as I do. You know, and that's one of the things I say, you know, if someone wants to give you money, you have to find a way to say yes. Right. And that's like kind of a skill that you learn and build up over time and finding opportunities. And I think for me, what I've recognized is that it's a little bit a function of your audience, right? My audience is primarily Uber and Lyft. Drivers, gig workers, right? And that's kind of who we're creating the content for. So especially at the start, you know, our monetization strategy was much more geared towards those drivers and the products and services they need. And kind of what I found was that, you know, these drivers are making 15 to 20 bucks an hour before expenses. They're not going to go invest $5 in anything, right? Like they're not going to go invest $5 in an app or a service, even if it provides long-term value to them. They're much more concerned with their immediate needs. So we had a lot more success working with advertisers directly, you know, sponsored posts, sponsored videos, newsletter ads, working with affiliates. You know, we sign up drivers for Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Postmates, Instacart right now. Now, you know, these companies are, you know, we've gotten paid bounties of $500 to $1,000 per worker in the good old days. And, you know, extracting $1,000 out of a bunch of gig workers is like pulling teeth. Whereas, you know, I get a little notification on my phone like, oh, you signed up some driver who probably, you know, typed in like how to work for Instacart. And we ranked number one for that term in Google. And, you know, they clicked through using our link, went through the whole process and signed up and we got paid. Very different, you know, it's hard to get into that position, but very different, you know, sort of flows, I guess you would say. And so I think that what I'm exploring now is understanding like, all right, we have different, you know, one of the challenges I will say that like I'm facing in my business right now is that we cater our content to the gig workers, but a lot of our revenue streams are more from advertisers, from, you know, Uber and Lyft are now public. So we have a lot of like sell side analysts and, you know, hedge funds and folks like that that want to understand Uber and Lyft and AB5, you know, these labor issues. So it's sort of about understanding like, all right, how can we reach those people that kind of want to pay us, but at the same time, you know, be providing content and value to our audience, which is why these people want to pay us in the first place.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And, you know, as we wrap things up, I think just the last point is sort of how you guys have moved upstream, you know, folks, you know, they start off with a niche and then, you know, now you're selling to your services to hedge funds.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually funny when you put it that way.
Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. I mean, I think really just the way that I've done it is kind of just slowly, or maybe not slowly all the time, but, you know, just over time. You know, actually, I started off doing driver coaching. I think we charge $75 or $50 for a half hour session with drivers, strategize, you know, go over tips and tricks with them. And, you know, really over time, just kind of realize that, you know, I think the other thing is too, when opportunities come inbound, right? I think especially as an entrepreneur, I now have two kids, so I'm very limited with my time. And it's not that I'll only talk to people for money, but, you know, I want every conversation that I'm having to kind of have a purpose, right? And a lot of people that are really interesting or really cool, you know, I might be able to talk to, but I think about how they feed into a larger initiative, right? Like over the past year and a half, I've really tried to get into angel investing and learn and think about that. So if a VC emailed me right now and wanted to chat, I would definitely take that call or take that meeting because it sort of feeds into a larger goal of mine and an ecosystem that I'm trying to learn about. Whereas in the past, it may not have been as valuable because guys like that aren't going to pay someone like me for their time, but analysts might. And so really for me, I think it's just sort of about understanding what opportunities there are. And if someone, you know, doesn't fit into something that I'm working on, maybe that's someone that I funnel to consulting, right? It's sort of like I try to turn, I don't like to turn any opportunity away. I want them to say no to me, right? If someone comes to me and wants a free, you know, kind of PR on my site, I say, oh, you know, probably not a company I'm going to cover at this time, but if you want to advertise with us, here's our media kit, right? And that's going to have a low success rate, but we have sold some ad deals like that. And I think it's just kind of over time, we try lots and lots of different opportunities and sort of just be understanding. Like, I think one thing I've had good success with too is trying to be a connector or a part or a piece of large financial transactions, which sounds kind of basic, but some of our best relationships, partners, you know, like I do consulting, for example, with fleet owners, with people starting new companies. And it's like pulling teeth trying to get them sometimes to pay me $500 for an hour, but then they'll go and spend, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of dollars on insurance, or they'll spend it on hundreds of thousands of dollars on an app developer. But there's, you know, I feel like they're so cheap with me, which is, you know, less on the, you know, because they're not getting a tangible result, right? They're getting strategy or they're getting concepts or introductions or whatever it might be. And so, you know, I've integrated, I have an insurance partner now that provides like commercial and liability insurance, and I split the commission with him. I've got an app developer that I refer to people starting new companies, and he pays me 30% of any deals that we close. And so then it's sort of in a way like I'm trying to kind of like interject myself into some of these large, sometimes, you know, $100,000 plus transactions and be a part of that, and where I can still, you know, now I have like incentive to provide value to a lot of these guys.
Yeah, Harry, thanks so much for that. Really appreciate it. And yeah, thanks for joining us today. Can you just, you know, tell people, for listeners or people who are watching on YouTube, you know, where they can follow you, where they can find you?
Yeah, definitely. So I like to be everywhere and anywhere. So if you type the rideshare guy into any box on the internet, I should pop up. But the best place is to find me. I'm pretty active on Twitter at the rideshare guy. If you're interested in the sort of industry topics that we cover, my podcast is in iTunes and Spotify and everywhere. Again, the rideshare guy. And then we also have the YouTube channel and the blog, which are a little more geared towards the gig workers and Uber and Lyft drivers, but can definitely learn a lot there too. So that's where you can find me.
Thanks again, Harry. Everyone, have a good day.
Thanks.